dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox. Greetings, everybody, and welcome into the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Show. This is show 261 of our eighth show of season 9. Got to get that right because I know everybody's keeping track. This show, like all shows, brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe off Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. You could give them a call at 740-773-7529, or you could probably answer your own questions at TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. They are, in fact, open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and, of course, we do so appreciate their sponsorship. My name is Bruce Knox. Right beside me is Mr. John Bruce. Let's all say hello to John. John, hello there.
Hey, Bruce, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well. How you been?
I've been good. I'm glad you allowed me to bring my service cat in with me this week. just had a rough weekend of watching football and Joker, so I needed my cat in here, so I appreciate it.
I had seen where you tweeted out that you went to see Joker. We're not going to do reviews right now. It's another podcast that we'll have to manufacture, but I'm glad that you are able to attend tonight, even by the power of the service cat. And then, of course, we want to say hello to the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Shane Combs. Shane, how about you? Are you in one piece after a wild weekend of sports?
Oh, absolutely. Within the past week, I know we were just talking. I was able to come down your way and take in the atmosphere made possible by one Bruce Knox, and then and then I returned home to the SVC on Thursday and Friday, a little Saturday morning, and so forth. So all kinds of things to talk about. Looking forward to it tonight.
Well, speaking of tonight, what is on the agenda this week?
I think we have a great agenda. I as always, you know, you mentioned Triple Crown there. We're so thankful to have them throughout this whole nine-season spurt here on SVC Sports Talk. But, you know, season to season, we also want to be very, very thankful for our sponsors, Advanced Services. You hear me talk about them a lot. We're happy to have them on board. So thank you to Advanced Services, North Fork Animal Clinic. Appreciate Blake and all he does there. And then obviously Crown Hill Golf Club with Kevin and the job they do. So between Advanced Services, North Fork Animal Clinic, and Crown Hill Golf Club, we'll have our various segments, but we're going to kind of change it up a little bit tonight. One has kind of a Lady Mustangs theme where mm-hmm. we have it's been quite a fall for the Lady Mustangs there up in Williamsport. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to talk a little bit Uniota fall teams in general. This is a time of year where Uniota always seems to spread their athletes out and really have some success, and this fall has been no different. Obviously, I have a big football game coming up, Uniota Paint Valley. Had a real good email. If you don't mind, Bruce, I think that might be the way to start the show. If you want to go into the inbox there, I thought we just really relevant in terms of national news and in terms of sports news. And this one's had me thinking quite a bit over the weekend here. If you want to go ahead and start with that.
I'll pull it out here. Okay, got it out. The fan is asking us in the inbox or through the inbox, as a big sports fan and a high school coach, I was wondering what influence you thought the California legislation that will allow athletes to be paid for the use of their name, likeness, and image could eventually have on our local high school athletes. Thanks for all you guys do for our kids. Love the show and the website. That is a thought-provoking email, I am sure.
Yeah, it is. And you know, for our fans that maybe are not aware, it's basically the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Basically, he's a former athlete himself. He played baseball. I want to say it's at Santa Clara. He signed in the Senate Bill 206. and it's not going to come into effect until 2023. But man, I'll tell you, it's really got some things stirred up and some conversations stirred up, and it really has your mind thinking ahead in terms of, is this the first step of what could turn into to a whole different landscape of sports for college? And mm-hmm. then how does that into the next generation maybe impact our high school kids? And, you know, I don't know. I think that the it sets up for the leaders in college sports to probably have to respond here. Obviously, we have about 3-4 years for them to take a look at the way they want to do this in terms of the way they're going to come back. I read one thing where it said it's kind of like the NCAA and California played a little game of chicken here. Yep. In terms of who's going to get first. But there's about 1,100 schools there that make up the NCAA. I think I read 58 of them there in California. So they're saying that if a lot of this comes into effect under the current body of work of the NCAA, those schools would not be eligible for tournament. Well, obviously, you're talking about a $1 billion industry here. Billions in terms of dollars industry here, that this has been coming for a long time. So I just wanted to kind of give a background on that for maybe fans that were not aware. And it's the first thing, John, I would ask you, and Bruce, I'd love to get your take on this too, because I think we can all give different perspectives, is before we even talk about the bill or answer the question, maybe give me where you guys stand on the thought of college athletes being paid. Bruce, I would love to come to you as someone who, you know, has had a chance to maybe see a lot more of the changes over the years here in terms of college and so forth. What your take is on the idea of paying kids beyond a scholarship to play college sports?
Well, first, you're saying that I'm older than John. That was clearly implied.
Yeah.
Yes. More experienced, yes. I don't know, Shane. I guess, and you know, we all say, are they paid? I would argue, first of all, that yes, they are paid. It's just not in cash. They are paid through scholarships, and that in itself is a payment. People don't think of it that way, but total compensation, there is some element there. It seems to be a bigger and bigger thing as, you know, professional sport is paid more and more all the time. And so it has become greater. So you've got somebody, you know, signing with a $3 million signing bonus alone, or five or whatever they are getting. And so it makes the zero compensation, or the zero cash compensation, it widens that gap from college to pro. I think I would argue.
Well, no, that's fine. I wanted to just a kind of a starter, just to get a take on, you know, what the feeling is. This is usually something pretty passionate that, you know, different people will talk about, and maybe some people don't care.
Well, I don't know where John's going to come down on this, but I'm going to take I'll just for purposes of high ratings, perhaps, I'll just take the standpoint that they are in fact compensated already, and they should not receive any other compensation.
And that's
they
fair
know
enough.
They know what they're getting into when they go. So they're John. What say you?
I do think that's fair. I'll just bring up a couple points, counterpoints. Like, for instance, JT Barrett, former Ohio State quarterback, could have made there's a chance he could have made more money as the Ohio State quarterback in college than he'll ever make mm-hmm. in 1 year in the rest of his life. I know he's on the NFL practice squad, so he still makes at least a decent amount of money now, but it's just for someone like that, you know, they're getting paid with the scholarship, which I completely agree with that. I don't love hearing the poor college athlete story, but at the same time, they're making so much money for the university, that goes to the coaches and kind of the student athletes are kind of locked into where they're going. Mm-hmm. They can only go certain places. Like if I'll use Tate Martell that just transferred from Ohio State. say he wanted to go somewhere else in the Big Ten. Well, Ohio State could say, well, no, you know, you can't go anywhere else in the Big Ten. Where if you or me went to Ohio State and went, I think I'm going to go to Indiana next year. Mm-hmm. You can just go.
Yeah.
So you're kind of locked in. So I think there's some other things that I would like to see changed. And like coaches can kind of go wherever, whenever. So to me, I think if they're making money for that university, I don't mind the chance that they can make money. I do think it has to be regulated big time because it could easily get out of control. Because, you know, it could just go to which booster has the most money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part that worries me. I do agree with you that they are paid in their scholarships. I completely agree with that because, you know, some of them wouldn't be going to college if it wasn't for that. But also that's another point is for college football, you have to go for 3 years. So that's taken away 3 years of
eligibility,
a chance to,
right?
Yeah, and kind of to make money. So like a Leonard Fournette that plays for the Jacksonville Jaguars now, if you saw him in high school – that dude was ready to play in the NFL from then, but he had to go to school for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And at the running back position, that can kind of deter your overall money making because running backs kind of break down within a few years.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of how I look at it. I somewhat agree and then somewhat disagree.
Okay. Shane, one thing that I will concede there, John made good points about the fact that I think there are some other things that need to change before that. How do you kind of feel about this whole thing? I mean, we haven't even gotten to the how it affects the high school athletes, but what's it say to you about college athletes?
Well, I've been on record before on the show. We touched on this, gosh, I don't remember, several years ago, but I've been on record that I am not in favor of college athletes getting paid at all. I think the scholarship is really, really good. Now, I'm all for the scholarships getting a little bit bigger and the regulations coming through the NCAA and through the schools to make certain scholarships, but to say that these guys don't get stuff is just false. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a 4-year window of their life, or and if they're good enough, as John has said, 3, and even then they're not made to come to play Division I football and do this. If they're good enough to, you know, just work out and to go, and, you know, we got guys sitting out of bowl games and doing whatever now and so forth. It's, you know, they're getting opportunity. I can remember 30 years ago playing at just like little OUC where we go to Middletown and Claremont, and like I would get 30, 40, 50 bucks just for meal money and stuff. So I'm guessing J.K. Dobbins in 2019 isn't going hungry. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at the facilities these schools have, when you look at the gear that they get, when you look at the – like I saw on game day the other day where, like, looking at some of the meals that they eat throughout the week, just the facilities and the overall things that they have available to them in terms of their food and their living and their academic help and so forth, to say they don't get – some things in return, that's a bit much. Now, am I okay with maybe some funds being set up to be passed on to them after their playing days or after X amount of you know, quarter hours or semester hours or whatever it might be? Yeah, I'm open to that. But mm-hmm. I just think you're opening a whole thing that I'm not crazy for. Maybe I'm the old guy that says get off my lawn or whatever. I just to get into the email a little bit more, and then I'll come back to you, John. I look at this – I'm not saying next week or next month. I'm saying that when I look at the generation of when I played to when I coach, so now you look at how the AAU circuit and club sports and personal trainers and all of these different recruiting agencies and different things have gotten involved. Okay, not a week goes by where I don't have some sort of email about, hey, send me, you know, your information on Lane Mettler or Brock Blanton or Cruz McFadden. We want to get their baseball stuff up on this website or this magazine or this different thing. I can only imagine another 25, 30 years down the line, if we're not careful, are we going to have a situation, John, where when a kid at Uniota is getting looked at by even just a Division III school or a Division II school, where they're going to come in and they're going to start saying, well, hey, we have this booster or this alumni that, you know, offer you this, or, you know, if you do, we have a thing in our baseball program where if you do this commercial here, here, and here, that you can get money for your image or your likeness or the different things. And I don't know. I mean, and maybe that's just the way our world's going. Maybe that's what it's supposed to be. Maybe kids are supposed to have that opportunity. I still just think there's something to be said that to act like they're not getting something in return in terms of scholarship money or the different things that they're getting compared to a lot of athletes. And the fact that some of these athletes that we're talking about going to the next level, we're talking about a very small percentage. I mean, most of what's going to happen here is you're going to have a lot of people going in. It's going to be the highest bidder, so to speak, right? It's going to be them coming onto high school campuses as they recruit your kids, and you're going to start to have that. So I'm not saying that's going to happen in the next week or the next month. I'm just saying as we go into this next generation, as this starts to change college, it usually doesn't take long, guys, for what happens in the professional ranks to come down in the college and what happens in the college to come down in the high school. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that in this past generation with the AAU and the club sports and so forth. This is just something that is a little bit alarming, a little bit concerning to me in, to say, the next 20, 25 years of high school. You know, John, maybe am I overreacting there, or do you kind of see where I'm coming from if we were to fast forward, you know, a generation ahead?
I can see how it would happen, and I could see where the AAU part would actually factor into high school sports, making it to where people are being paid through AAU and they just don't play high school sports. To me, that's where it would probably impact it the most, in my opinion, because I don't think, especially our locally, high school sports are like really big business like college athletics are. So that's why I think it'll take a long time to actually impact the high school level. But I could see, you know, like you mentioned, their AAU club sports, that's where the shoe companies come in. I mean, it happens with big time players. So like you mentioned, it's going to happen, you know, to big time players around here that maybe aren't going big time D1, but they're going to go D2, D3, NAIA. So I could definitely see some money coming in if we're not careful with this. You know, I just think, you know, maybe, you know, we have to control the boosters, obviously, but I think it'd be really cool to see a kid be able to, you know, make some money off of a shirt he sells that has like their image on it. Or, you know, I just to me, kind of looking at the, I know you saw these growing up, but like when the Bulls would win the NBA championship, they'd have the pictures of the Bulls team on it, like even if just caricatures. I think that'd be kind of cool for, you know, a kid to be able to have or sell with their likeness on it, even if it's just for a little bit of profit. You know, obviously I don't like seeing stuff like that in high school. You know, but with college, I think it'd be kind of cool. And plus, I mean, if you look back in the 2000s and the 90s, I mean, how many Eddie George jerseys did you see? They didn't have his name on it, but you knew who 27 for the Buckeyes was.
OSU probably made a killing off of that, though.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah. And that's partially where I'm.
But on did the brand of Ohio State not do something for Eddie George's career?
I think
yes,
so.
But yeah, but I think he was going to be big wherever he went.
So if Eddie George went to Akron, he was going to go on to win the Heisman?
With the numbers he put up, it's possible. I mean, obviously it's really, you know, really far out there on that. But, you know, Troy Davis went to Iowa State when Iowa State was terrible, and he got invited to – it was either two or three Heisman he was a Heisman finalist two or three times, and it was – going to Iowa State, and they were awful. So I do think talent kind of will play out wherever they're at. So yeah, it's being at these schools does help, but you know, if you put Ja Morant at Duke, he's probably going to be a top five draft pick. He's at Murray State and he was a top five draft pick. So, you know, that's basketball different than football, but, if you're good, they're going to find you. and they're going to make money off of you. So I think it would be, to me, I think it'd be fair to make a little bit of money, even if it's not a ton. I mean, and like you said, if you say we'll put it in a fund for you after college, I'm fine with that. And I do think that, you know, like you mentioned, J.K. Dobbins isn't going hungry. He's not, because I've seen where OU athletes eat. And those places are gorgeous. They're clean. They're great. They're really good food. They switch out everything to where you're going to be eating well. And that's just on campus. So I can't imagine what they're doing when they travel. And their per diem, I mean, I'm sure they get some food and they can probably pocket the money if they really wanted to. So
a lot of those stipend things are the money of the kids. Absolutely. I would even go as far to say, we're talking about major sports, okay? Maybe that's not even the right way to go. I would even say all the way down to like a Division II tennis player or golfer or different things. I would even say they're taken care of pretty well on the road. They're taken care of pretty well in their free golf and some of their equipment and some of their different things. I guess that's where I'm coming from. That's where I'm coming from in some of this. And I certainly don't want to cheat the question where it's high school. So I guess the one last thing I wanted to clarify on the question is, in a day, guys, where I'm getting calls from coaches, you wonder, is the next generation of high school coaches going to get a call from an agent? You know what I'm saying? Like in terms of, hey, I'm interested in trying to sign so-and-so. And just the same way the NCAA is having their hand forced, you just wonder 20 years down the road, is someone – Well, take like Governor Newsom, for example, here in California. Let's not act like this didn't have a little publicity behind it. You know, the guy signed this bill on LeBron James's show. So there's certainly some publicity stunt involved in all of this. So I guess I'm just looking down the road. I'm trying to envision what this looks like 15, 20 years from now, which that's always hard to do. But I just wonder if it's not going to change an entire recruiting landscape for our high school kids. And I'm not even talking about the big-time Division I recruit. I'm talking about all the way down to what we get a lot of here in the SVC, John, which is that D2, Division III type of athlete, and some of the things that, you know, kids are going to start to get offered and so forth. And maybe I just need to catch up with the times. I'm just a little bit old school in terms of I feel like there's a lot there that these kids are getting. So,
well, Shane, don't you think? I mean,
anything else, guys? There, I certainly don't want to shut you out.
Well, I was just going to say there are services now that will shop, you know, for a price. They basically shop people to colleges. Is that, I mean, aren't they kind of bettering things for the student? And I mean, they charge a price for doing that. You know, college prospects, do they not do that?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yes. I mean, that's my point is, I don't think we're that far off from some pretty dynamic things, John, in terms of taking place, in terms of the way kids are going to be recruited to the next level.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned LeBron James' show. As much as I love LeBron and the stuff that he's done for, you know, Akron and everything. And I mean, LeBron made me really get back into the NBA after I got out of high school. But man, he's done some great stuff for his community. But man, I feel like his influence that's coming on high school and college sports is not great. I mean, his buddy Rich Paul is the one that's really been trying to get agents in with college athletes. And, you know, that does worry me. And then eventually that's going to trickle down. Once they're done with the college athletes, they're going to go to the high school athletes. And you already got crazy LeVar Ball taking his kids overseas and selling his waste of a brand. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it does concern me. I think it really needs regulated. But, you know, it is interesting to see where this all goes.
It's a great question, Shane, though. Well thought out and probably in the back of many of our minds right now. And we'd love to hear how the listeners out there feel as well. And we'll give you contact information towards the end of the show about how you can let us know what you're thinking. What's this eventually going to, what kind of changes is this eventually going to lead to in the high school athletes? It's just hard to tell, but I'm sure that there's some people out there that have really given it some thought, and we'd love to for you to share that information with us as well. Guys are going to have to move along. Up next, we head to Williamsport to look at two groups of Lady Mustangs having a championship-filled fall. As we move into this section of the old podcast, this is brought to you by Advanced Services, Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. Advanced Services, HVAC.com. You can give them a call, 877-947-4499. They are celebrating 20 years of serving Southern Ohio, and you can schedule a consultation today on their website, Advanced Services, Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. Shane, one of the groups, so Westfall Lady Mustangs, I was referring to just after the or just before the bump there, is the golf team. So why don't you tell us about the state-bound Westfall golf team?
Well, it's something we've talked about and hinted at all year long. It's just an exciting time. Westfall winning a district championship. And, you know, as I've said before, we talked last week about things and verbiage that could be changed. One thing that confuses the sports fans so much is, you know, golf goes sectional, district, state. So where a lot of these other sports go district, regional, we associate regional champs as being state bound. Well, in golf, when you are a district champion, you're going to the state. And the only reason I can think that they do it that way, guys, is, and maybe this would be a question for like my brother or one of the ADs, John, locally, is things that are associated in the district are controlled by like your Southeast District Board and so forth, compared to all the sports that I've been associated with. When you get to the regional level, like when our baseball team went to the regional, the OHSCA starts to take those things over. Hmm. So I don't know if that is the reason for that, but I'm telling you, a lot of that, just that type of headline and that type of bracket setup is kind of confusing to a lot of sports fans. So they don't totally understand that a district championship again equals state bound, and that's exactly what Westfall is. They shoot 356 and led as they normally are by Maddie Schultz, and she wins the district individual championship. And guys, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Again, I don't think it's something that people maybe quite have the true understanding of. In this case, there's a girl from Fairland's, a nice player. She's also going to the state as an individual qualifier. But she shoots 74, three back of Maddie. And after that, Maddie is 15 shots again clear of the field. So remember, John, last week we talked about her at the sectional level doing this. And now at the district level, she's doing this. And I certainly want to talk about Westfall as a team because what they've accomplished is incredible. But I first wanted to highlight Maddie. What people that don't play golf, what they don't understand is you're talking one day, one chance. You go out on this particular day and you either shoot the score on that day or you don't. And, you know, it's not like in volleyball or basketball or softball where, you know, you're playing defense against the other team, or you don't have to always play your best or be perfect to win. You know, take Phillips, for example. You know, when she plays in the district volleyball tournament here in a couple weeks, you know, she goes out in the first set and kind of gets off to a bad start, guys, and maybe hits a ball out of bounds or hits it in the net or whatever. She can still use her overall talent, her size, to put pressure on the defense. She's impacting how the other team plays. Does that make sense? You know, with her talent, they have to defend her. In golf, I understand the argument might be, well, nobody can defend Maddie. Well, the thing of it is no one – Maddie can't defend anyone else. You know, when Sylvia Gray plays tennis, I imagine Sylvia's ability to return everything she sees makes it tough to play against, where, you know, Maddie has no control over her opponents chipping in a couple times in a round or hitting a 30-foot putt, you know, to play at a certain level. Or, you know, if she plays and she hits a bad shot or has a bad hole, that counts. You know what I mean? There's no best of five. It's that score on that day. So for her to go out in the sectional and district play and basically be 15 shots clear of the field, other than that one particular girl that's qualifying individually that finished three back of her, That is remarkable. That is unbelievable. And to think that she's just now coming up on the halfway point of her career, just tremendous. So happy for her. I know how hard she works at it. That's some really good stuff. And certainly want to highlight the whole team as well, guys. We mentioned, you know, Maddie, she shoots the 71. Ella Seeley, a senior, shoots 90. Elizabeth Hart, a senior, shoots 100. Emily Cook and Maddie Cook, the two freshmen there, Emily shoots 100 and Maddie shoots 95. And I think that's the other thing to talk about here, guys, in the 18-hole format. Westfall wins this rather easily, and by no means did they play their very best. This is a team that is going to play the gray course there at Ohio State. I've shared out some tee times and stuff there on Facebook and some different things that you can follow them, and we'll have updates on Friday, Saturday of this week. But they're playing the gray course. This is a group of girls here, very, very capable under Coach Kevin Schultz of going up there and shooting some scores that are going to compete for a very respectable finish. I was doing some research here. You know, all the Westfall girls there finished pretty much up there in the top 8 to 13. Keep in mind, Emily Lott of Uniota, 92. That was a 10th place finish. Emma Winland finishes 19th. So I thought that was outstanding for a conference as well, guys. So we heard from Emma on last week's show. It was kind of neat for her to have that experience representing Paint Valley. And then Emily Lott, an honorable mention all-league kid there on the boys' side, enters the girls tournament in that top 10. But, you know, as we look at Westfall's chances, as I do some research here, looking at the gray course this week, you know, there's a lot of schools that shot in that 350, 360 range coming out of the East. I know Tusky shot in the low 330s. I know Lima Central Catholic was a team that I saw shot in the low 330s. But overall, Maddie individually, I know there's 5-6 kids shooting there in the low 70s. I know a kid from St. Henry had a real nice score. A couple Southwest teams also shooting low, but Lakewood had a nice kid. Lakota had a nice kid. And then obviously the girl from Fairland, who Maddie beat by 3, goes as well. But I think it's very realistic to see this particular group not only go to the state level, but to really compete not just individually, but as a team score as well. So that's something that's exciting. Keep in mind, it's a 2-day event, so that really separates the field a lot too. You know, it's not that short sample size of, you know, the 1 9-hole round that we play so much of down, you know, locally. Mm-hmm. This is not only 18 holes, it's 2 days of 18 holes. So that spreads it out, but just real happy for them and excited to see how Maddie and the Westfall Lady Mustangs play this weekend, guys. So that's something. Congrats to them, and we'll certainly keep an eye on.
We'll be watching that Friday and Saturday then. And then the other group of Lady Mustangs that we want to talk about would, of course, be the volleyball team, which appears on the doorstep of an outright SVC title.
Well, they do. They've clinched the share there. What a match that was with Huntington the other night. And, you know, they dropped the first set and they rebound to win. It sounds like the third set was really the one that was the tell, a 30-28. And then they were able to ride that momentum to the 25-15 there in the fourth set. But as always, Kristen Phillips and Josie Williams leading the way. They get great support from Marissa Mullins and Claire Latham. And then I think where this team's really come on, not just with Mullins and Latham being, you know, the other setter opposite of Williams there, where, you know, she does a good job of continuing the offense and offering a little bit of good serving and hitting herself. I think it's players like Haley Young and Lauren Daniels. You heard Josie on an interview earlier on SVC Sports Talk talking about some of the serving of Lauren and so forth, some of the intangibles that they bring, the passing of Grace Wolf and Kayla Fleischman. I think that all of these particular roles that we know are so important, John, on championship teams have kind of started to fall in place. So in a year where we have so many teams and so many rotations that have so many moving parts to them, this has been a pretty steady rotation. It's been pretty steady leadership with setting from Williams and Latham. Obviously, understanding where the ball needs to go with Phillips. Mullins offering some support when Phillips goes to the back row. And then some of those other kids I've mentioned. So really, really exciting. They're going to try this week probably as a lot of people are listening, the head-to-head with Adina allows Adina to stay in this thing for a share. And then obviously, if Adina would knock them off, Zane Trace is no give me. We know that's a very good volleyball team. So the outright is not a given, but nonetheless, Westfall champion. And I guess my question here, John, for you was this. I'm intrigued to get your take on this because I know you spent some time at Westfall.
Yeah.
Westfall has worked through all the facilities. I've been on record with their facilities. I'm not about to go down that road right now. I know I had texts, I had emails, I had all sorts of things where people were really questioning some of the decisions to even play volleyball in that particular gym this week. And that's something for a whole nother topic because I think tonight needs to be about the athletes at Westfall and what they've accomplished. And they have put together some incredible excellence. I would even throw into this, Bruce, one thing maybe we didn't mention, the Westfall ladies soccer team in terms of what they've – so think about how many athletes they've spread. There's been some successful cross-country runners and so forth. So think about how they're spreading their athletes across. I just wonder, John, if there's something you can put your finger on with Westfall. I even highlight a good friend of ours, the leadership, not just the coaching, but the leadership of athletic director Trevor Thomas. You know, obviously the great coaching we've highlighted, what Jess is doing and Kevin's doing and so forth. You know, just I'll kind of give you the floor here and take it whatever way you want in terms of highlighting what you think Westfall's done and maybe some keys to their success.
Well, I think that they are a pretty tight-knit community, especially for kind of being in such a large district. So, you know, you kind of think of Piketon as being extremely tight-knit. Well, it's the town of Piketon. And we always say, you know, Williamsport, but there's – Williamsport's not that big. There's a lot – it's a big district, but they're a very tight-knit district, so there's a lot of pride in that school. A lot of pride in the way they do things. Maybe it's the kind of farmer's mentality of, you know, how hard they work. They don't mind the heat. They don't mind the gym being hot. It's got them in really good condition. It's got them, you know, when they're at home, you know, it's a big advantage for them. And when they're on the road, they're probably just like, oh, it's nice and cool. This will be an easy one. So, I mean, it doesn't really affect things that much for them. Now, you mentioned Trevor. I do think having someone there as long as Trevor's been there, he was the AD for a long time, then took a step back and has been the AD again for the last 5 or 6 years. He knows what it takes to run a good program. He knows how to get people in the right positions to have success, and he knows how to kind of coach them through it. So as kind of being the senior coach there at this time, he's done a really good job of finding the right people and also getting them the advice that they maybe need as young coaches. So it's a really good place to start coaching too. I think you'll see that in basketball. You know, they got a couple of new coaches, and with his leadership, I think they'll be in at least pretty good shape coaching wise. So I think it's very important to have someone who cares about the community, who understands the community. He's been there for 20 years now, or coming up on 20 years. I don't want to age him any, but you know, it's very important for those. And I mean, like Thursday, I'll just use him as an example. Thursday, they didn't have a school because the heat or the air conditioner went out in the elementary. So the high school was the same temperature as it always was. So the high school kids, it wouldn't have bothered them. But for the elementary kids, they have air conditioner. So I understand why. But he went up on his day off and painted the football field. So, I mean, it's just, you know, having someone who's going to invest that much time, I think, helps their younger coaches. So I do think that's very important. It's the female athletes they've had the last, going back past 2014 when they won the softball state championship, has just been really impressive. You know, obviously for volleyball, having three Phillips sisters come through is That's a pretty nice thing to have. But at the same time, that's one out of six on the court, and they've had pretty good success overall with other teammates, and I think their youth programs are really good. It's an interesting dynamic because of, you know, kind of the facility situation, but it's pretty awesome. Like, I was a part of it for 12 years, and you could just tell how much it meant to the community when they had success. And I think that helps build kids to, try to get that success when they get older.
Yeah, that's really well said, Bruce. You know, again, from a volleyball perspective, you know, Phillips is just a dominant player, and Williams really, really good. And like I said, there's kids that really complement those two well. I just think this team's been really put together in that rotation really well. And I think that's well said from John.
Shane, anything else we need to highlight in volleyball this week?
Yeah, there really is. There's a couple different things, actually. I'll mention something and throw it to John, and then I'll finish up, if that's okay, Bruce. I think the first thing comes there at Uniota. Hallie Pinkerton, want to say congrats to her. 1,500 career digs. Wow, what a career that is, the consistency. This is a kid that we had her on the show earlier this week going through a position change, and you know, she's a kid throughout the first, you know, 3 years is the libero, and even this year, no matter, you know, what color her jersey is, she's as good a defender, good as a passer as we have in this league. You know, we've watched her throughout her career really take some games over with her effort in the back row, and earlier this year I highlighted a couple of those defensive things. I know that home against Adina earlier this year, her and Amber Cottrell defensively. And Amber was a kid, John, that also went 1,000 career digs that night here earlier last week. So congrats to Pinkerton and Cottrell on those incredible milestones. And, I know Uniota with Pierce coming on. I know the way Stolle defends the net. This is kind of a team defensively. I talked about their identity earlier in the year, John, with Pinkerton, Cottrell in that back row, with someone like Miller's experience, and then with Stolle and some of those kids at the net. Now Pierce giving them this offense. Talk to us a little bit. I know the Coleman sisters have been right in the middle of all this as well. You know, I've mentioned they're as good athletes as we have in our league. John, I know you had a chance to kind of follow them here in the last couple of weeks, maybe talk to the Coleman sisters a little bit. Maybe just talk to us about Uniota and set up your audio there.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting season for them, because we all had kind of high expectations for them. Then kind of got knocked down, had some injuries, and that's kind of when Sophie Coleman stepped in as a freshman. She played libero for a couple of weeks, and that's kind of when Pinkerton switched positions. And now it's gotten to where, Pinkerton is still playing all the way around, but Emily Coleman's actually playing the libero. It's been an interesting season for them, and they've kind of gotten to a role lately, knocking off Westfall two Thursdays ago, and then this past week beating Adina in five. Those two matches were really good matches, and then beating Paint Valley on Thursday. So they've won three straight. You know, it's kind of interesting for them. You know, obviously congratulations to Hallie Pinkerton and Amber Cottrell on their big accomplishments. But after the Adina game, I was able to catch up with Emily and Sophie. I kind of go back and forth. I think on the audio you can hear me say, you know, so Emily or Sophie. So Bruce, can you fire that up for us?
So obviously big win, five sets. What does this win mean for you guys after, you know, a big win on Thursday against Westfall to knock off the top two teams record-wise in the SEC?
Oh, it's great. We came in, we beat Westfall, and that was our biggest win of the season. That's the biggest accomplishment we had. We knew if we couldn't get the gold ball, we don't want anyone to get it. And then coming back in and taking Adina, we wanted to do it in three, but better five. It was a good game.
Yeah, and Sophie, really, I felt like the match kind of turned on your serving there in the third set. You know, how does that make you feel as a freshman to come in with, you know, a big responsibility to be such a good server and setter?
It feels pretty good. Natalie, she always says, look for holes, and if you ace somebody, keep going after them. So that's what I did.
Yeah. And Emily, as a big sister, how much fun is it to get to play with your little sister and see her have a big moment like that?
It's fun. At times it can be frustrating because I want to be harder on her, but I've got to relax. And be like, yell at her at home, just relax right now and encourage her.
And then Sophie, you know, you get to play with the Big Sister one season. How much fun is that for you, and what does it kind of mean to you?
It's really cool. I've always wanted to play with them like before. We do get in arguments a lot.
I'm a little more competitive.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just saying, with how competitive you guys both are, you know, it's how do you guys kind of keep that in at times also?
I think we also know what each other can do, like our strengths and also our weaknesses, but I always believe in her, and I've always wanted to play with her, so I'm glad she's up here.
Yeah. Sophie, you played a couple different roles this year. You played libero for a little bit, and now you're kind of more setter. You know, how difficult has that been for you, or how much fun are you having just doing it?
I'm having a lot of fun this year. I've never played libero before, so Natalie told me. It was kind of a surprise, but I took the role, and now I got moved to setter, which is what I've always done, so I feel more comfortable with this.
Yeah, and then Emily, obviously, Holly's played libero most of your guys' career together. How has this new challenge kind of came up for you?
Difficult at first, but I adjusted well. It's kind of cool because I started freshman year playing back row, and now you're in senior year playing.
Yeah. All right. Well, good job. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was Emily and Sophie Coleman. You know, Emily's a senior. Really good leader, plays super hard, and Sophie, you can kind of see, has a lot of that same thing in her, but she's a freshman, has done a really good job adjusting, and they're big-time keys to any postseason success Uniota has, and they still have a chance to finish in a tie for second and possibly have it by themselves if kind of things fall right.
Well, Bruce, if it's okay, I'll jump back in here and,
sure.
And add a couple more volleyball things. I talking on the other side of that league race there with Westfall and what John's mentioning there with the Uniota situation, you have Adina right there in the mix. Adina still has an opportunity head to head. By the time people listen to the show, you know, a lot of people have already passed Tuesday night where Adina and Westfall will do battle. And Adina still has an opportunity to share this thing. But I think we're going to talk brackets a little bit later to end the show. And I think that Adina, it becomes a scary team. And one of this is a group that has so much balance to it. You know, the one stat that jumped out at me in that Uniota Adina game on the Adina side, John, was Cameron Carroll with 43 digs, really, really doing a job. And they had great balance across the net. And I had a chance to see them on Thursday night, and a kid that just keeps jumping out at me every time I see him is Jenna Martin. And after mm-hmm. that St. Trace win, I had a chance to talk to Jenna. Bruce, if we could run that short clip.
Well, first of all, congratulations. The little slow start tonight. Where do you think in the second set you guys really turned it on and seemed to control the match the rest of the way out?
I don't know. I think things just started clicking. Like we all knew what we wanted to do, and we focused, and we made it happen.
I've been such a big fan of yours throughout the, you know, last year, and then especially in basketball, and some of the things I've seen you add to your game athletically and so forth. Tonight, right around that second, third set, I thought at the net you really got it going. You were mixing some hard swings with some nice tips, and talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing there at the net, finding some openings there on the tip shot as well.
Yeah, I was just focused mainly in the first sets, hitting hard. Then I noticed that there were holes, and I just knew that if I hit that, then I could get a kill. And my teammates really helped me out on that, telling me what was open.
I know you guys had some tough, you know, 4 and 5 set losses here in the last couple of weeks. But overall, from when I watched you play earlier in the year, you guys seem to really be coming together a little bit. How do you feel about your team as we come right up on tournament time here real soon?
I feel great because that game just showed us that we all just clicked. Like, it was great, and we all played our hearts out, and I like to see that. Can't wait for tournaments.
Well, you're outstanding tonight. I always enjoy watching you play. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Again, that's Adina's Jenna Martin, and just really, really like what she brings to the court. Long, athletic kid. You know, Fogelsong in the middle, opposite of her, really, they really impacted that Zane Trace. Now, keep in mind, Adina went through an injury with Garrison, one of their passers there. I mentioned Carol earlier, and then Riley does such a good job passing. And then when you put Garrison in the mix, Adina, I said all year long, is one of the deepest passing teams. With Garrison out, there was a serve received there in the first set that Zane Trace was able to win, that could cause a little bit of problems, but they were able to fill that up and do some things. And I think Adina becomes a really scary team as they go in. We'll talk about them a little bit later when we get to the brackets. But then the only other thing I would mention too, Bruce, I won't spend too much time because I'll probably touch on some of these things in the bracket. I just think Zane Trace Huntington becomes really dangerous. I think they're Sweet 16 type of good. And in Southeastern, just hiding out here a little bit, they've been through some tough injuries. They finally get Ava Christopher back. This is a team that, if my records are right, I think they're like 6-1, 7-2, somewhere in there when healthy. Like when they've played with their full lineup this year, they've only lost a time or two. So this is a team that is far better than that seed that we'll talk about a little bit later. So a lot of good volleyball stuff there, Bruce. But again, we'll touch on a little bit more later, maybe with the brackets.
All right. Up next, we talk tanks and how another fall has several Unioto teams performing at a high level. Our coverage here of the Unioto teams we're going to talk about, brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Give them a call, 740-986-4653, or you can look them up on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. Give Kevin and the staff out there a call, or look them up and communicate with them on the website, Crown Hill Golf Club. Appreciate their support, continued support of the SVC and, of course, of SEC Sports Talk. Well, Shane, let's talk a little about Unioto Golf.
Well, absolutely. I think it makes sense to put Crown Hill Golf Club on this sponsorship there because that's where Unioto just played there, and they come out victorious as your district champs. Congratulations to them. They just keep on keeping on. It seems year after year they just reload it and go, and led by Ty Schoblock's individual district title. I don't want to beat the dead horse too much, but everything I said about, you know, Westfall girls, about Maddie Schultz earlier, that applies here again. You know, you're going out in golf and you're beating every single individual in the entire district. You know, you're beating every single team in the entire district. There's not three and four brackets, John. There's one. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's one time all the teams that qualify for the district are there and you are the best. So I just hope that people can appreciate and understand how difficult that is to do in golf. And you, John, I could sit here and talk about Schoblock quite a bit because I think he's a really special kid. I think he's really kind of a neat athlete in the way he's done a lot of things and how he's really excelled a lot of things. But I think you'd be far more qualified to do so. So I'll ask you just to kind of, you know, let us know something about Ty Schoblock and kind of kid he is and the work ethic he possesses.
Ty is a very unique but super hardworking kid. One of my first interactions with him was when he was playing freshman basketball for me, and he was explaining to me how he eats his pizza, which I believe was either only the cheese or only the bread. Like he would pull the toppings off. So he's kind of what you'd kind of consider with kind of how golfers kind of can be, sort of like a left-handed reliever in baseball. But man, he's just a great kid. He works his tail off. But you know, one thing that might not be known, he's had several lingering injuries throughout his career. Last year, the morning of the state tournament, I went into school and he was in a walking boot. Then he goes out and shoots an 82, 83 and finishes 24th in the state. And that's somebody, you know, with an injury this year. If you look at his scores throughout the year, they've gotten better and better. It's because he's finally getting healthy. I always kind of joke around with him that it's probably because of that diet, but you know, he's worked his way through these injuries, and I think he could have a big weekend there this weekend because he's playing so well. I know there's certain things he's done. He may be too aggressive with how good he is. I know he did that in the sectionals a couple weeks ago, kind of tried to, I believe it was the ninth at JC's. He tried to put it on in two, and he could have just laid up and ended up just getting a par, but he ended up, I believe he double bogeyed on it. It's something that, because he's so good, he overhit the green. It's just he's so talented, and if he can kind of rein it in and just play it one hole at a time, one shot at a time, I could see him making an All-Ohio run and kind of carrying Unieta to one of their better finishes they've had. I believe Quade Kottenbach will be back for this weekend. He was out last weekend. His being the fourth, fifth, maybe yes, even the third score would be huge for them to get to make a push for perhaps a top five finish as a team. I'm not sure if they can get higher than that, but with how well Ty's playing, with how well Gerber's playing, Braxton Platt's played really well lately. I do think they're going to be able to push a little bit. They're obviously led by Ty. I was kind of shocked when I went back and looked at his scores the last couple of years and saw that he hadn't won a district. He had finished I think he'd finished in the top five each year. But this year I was really happy for him to finally get kind of over the hump and kind of doing what we've known he could do the last few years. And I think this weekend's going to be a big showing for him.
Again, that Unieta team, 342, they were three better than a very talented Galley Academy team. John mentioned playing without one of their starters there, hoping to have him back. Ben Haskins, I believe is how you say his name.
Yes.
Sophomore jumped in there, and tough situation. That's a great experience for a sophomore, because keep in mind, Schoblock, a senior, shoots the 73 to win the individual title. Levi Gerber, a solid round of 89, and Braxton Platt, 87, and Jace Tucker, 93. So Coach Drummond there, congratulations. Now, when you look at their scores compared, like what I was comparing Westfall's with some of their competition, the Unieta team score, they're going to have to be on their A game. They're going to play some pretty stiff competition in terms of what they've been shooting throughout the year, but certainly individually something to keep an eye on there. So really happy for them. Really, really cool for our area to have a boys and girls team going. I wanted to stick with Unieta. We'll talk a little bit more about these in the weeks to come, because, Sylvia Gray's just getting started, in terms of mm-hmm. What we think she's going to be up to. But I thought it was really cool. The thing that jumped out at me on the tennis side this week, John, even though we're talking about Unieta right now, is the fact that Dina had some representation. Mm-hmm. That's something we have not really been made aware of at the website. So, Hattie Shipley there of Adina gets to the final against Sylvia Gray, and they will, she'll obviously get a chance to go on to the district level as well. So that was kind of a cool thing. So congratulations to her there mm-hmm. at Adina. They're hoping to have a tennis team next year. But returning to what we're talking about, you have Sylvia Gray moving on there. The Unieta cross country team we highlighted big time last week in two different segments. The boys and then the girls with a nice statement win there in their invite, really kind of beating Huntington in several spots when I was looking at some of those head-to-head things. So that's an interesting runner of the year, player of the year type race there with Kerr at the top from Zane Trace. But Unieta and Huntington, we thought was going to be a little bit more competitive there. The Unieta girls kind of with spaced themselves apart. And then the Unieta girls soccer team as well as the boys soccer team and what they've done. So I guess my question, John, similar to what we talked about Westfall, I know the first thing that'll come up a little bit is obviously Unieta has a little bit of the enrollment to spread the wealth, but doesn't it say something about how Unieta has been able to use that enrollment and it kind of lends itself to the specialization? I know there's a lot of kids that certainly get involved in 2-3 sports, but you do see some of the specialization there and how it kind of is maybe pushed some of these athletes to the next level in terms of, hey, if you're going to be a starter in this particular sport, you're going to have to put a little extra time into it. And if you're going to come over here and be on this team, you're going to have to put a little extra time into it. It's a little bit more difficult at Unieta to say just to show up on the first day of practice and think you're going to be a part of some of these teams. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more of a year-round commitment, and you kind of see that in the Unieta fall sports, don't you?
Yeah, I think the fact that they've had some excellence in the past, especially, you know, beyond just the SVC, kind of lends itself to giving them a chance to bring in more kids and kind of specialize. I think Coach Paxton, he's been unbelievable for, you know, however many years he's been at the school. I think it's 17, 18 years, and he's just built the cross country program up, and he's kind of brought it to where, you know, he incorporates kids into cross country and track. So he's getting those kids, you know, they're constantly training because they're getting ready for the next sport. And then he's got the indoor track going, to where if a kid's going to specialize in running, that gives them a chance to, you know, really have a chance to go and keep going at the next level. I know, I think the Gazette, the photographer had a picture of three different Unita cross country runners that are currently running in college, all running at the same event. You know, so that's something pretty cool for them. And it's kind of helps push them at a high level. I'll say one thing for their cross country girls, Abby Rose, finished, you know, I believe it was 50th in that, cross country meet on Saturday. She's coming back from an injury. She was one of their top runners coming into the year. So if she can get back going into the district, you know, that's going to make them, you know, even stronger. So, I mean, like you mentioned, the kids doing 2-3 sports, but you still see some that are coming in just, you know, at the beginning. And if you don't put the time in, it's really hard to have success or to even make some of these teams because of how hard these kids push themselves. Right. And I'll add one more thing. Sylvia told me in class the other day that – she asked me, she said, are you going to make it down to the state tennis if I make it? Because, you know, she's pretty humble and she's 99% sure she's going to make it. But I was like, I don't know. She said, well, we don't have school that day. So I'm very excited. I'm actually going to be able to go. So hopefully she makes it. And, you know, obviously fingers crossed on that. So I do think the enrollment does help. Obviously it helps within the league and everything, but those are sports that are having success beyond just the league and beyond the district level. So like the girls soccer teams won 2 straight Division II sectional title or district titles. And you know, you don't see as many of those players playing basketball, but you are seeing them in track and a few of them play softball, but man, they are high-level soccer players. Mm-hmm. So you don't have just the ones coming in and just immediately having success unless they're putting in the extra work in it. So I do think that is a big part of why they have success is because of how good they've been in the past, because they don't want to let down kind of that tradition they've built.
Good stuff, yeah.
All right, guys, up next, we're going to talk football. Some thought week 6 would be the calm before the storm that the SVC is sure to give us in the final month. Stay with us as we talk perfect Panthers, young offensive talent, and preview Paint Valley's trip to Uninototo. Our third segment is going to be brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic, boarding and grooming. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff can be found at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. You can give them a call at 740-773-7387 or, of course, you can look them up on the web at northforkanimalclinic.com. And we appreciate their support of the podcast. Okay, guys, did you pick up on any theme for the bump music tonight? Nothing?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, so much for that. We'll leave that question dangling out there for perhaps input from the listening audience, if there is any. So we'll just leave that out there. So Well, we're going to get into our football segment. So before we do that, because we feel it's our job to keep our audiences fully informed, and because Shane Combs and John Bruce have been known to consume various and sundry delectable treats while supposedly observing SVC sports events, and furthermore, because we all know that Major League Baseball players always run out all fly balls, or we wish they would, to make Shane and Jobs' real jobs easier, we pride ourselves in bringing you the following segment, unsponsored though it may be at this time. It's time once again for the Eat It segment, where we quiz our sports guys on what they may have partaken of while out on the SVC trail this week. So first we're going to go to Shane. And Shane, why don't you describe your travels and perhaps what you consumed while there?
Well, I think one of the great notes to make here is Eric Cox was telling me yesterday that he was announcing the Ross County Band Festival over to Dena. And and was able to throw in a little shout out to our Eat It segment. So,
wow! Thank you, Eric. Thank you.
I knew that that Bruce would appreciate that one. The I actually had a variety of stops this week. I made my way down to MacArthur on Tuesday night there, and enjoyed some of the nachos with cheese and meat. That was a solid selection there. And then as I moved through the week, over at Zane Trace, didn't really have a lot of food that night, just some basic diet do and a little snack there. But then on Friday night, my first stop down to Python, I thought that was outstanding. And the first half over at the Band Booster, I went with the Red Streak Brat, and then I had the fish sandwich over on the home side at halftime. And then I had even a special Saturday morning over at Adena. Wow. Watching a little JV football. They even went with the breakfast flavor there, John, of the sausage, gravy, and biscuit. So
nice.
I had quite the variety. I would say throughout the week I don't know that I had anything that started rivaling the Zane Trace, you know, mushrooms or some of the appetizer sampler there or so forth, but or the pulled pork sandwich or anything like that. But I would say I had a solid week of right around the 4 rating there, Bruce. Okay. I would say most of those things certainly would be unfair to give them an average rating of a 2.5-3. So they're certainly above average. I don't know that anything went to the 5. So I'd say a solid 4 would be a very respectful score.
We're going to have to speak with management about some kind of a, you know, we have the, what is it, the Zony Awards for certain things towards the end of the year. We probably should have an Eat It type award.
I think what we'll do is we'll have an Eat It All League plate I'm thinking that I might go with by the time we get to the end of the fall.
Okay. All right. That's cool. And John, not to shut you off, was there anything that you partook of this week while at SVC events that you would like to mention?
No.
Well, there sounds like there's a story there, John.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
There was one big thing I was looking forward to at Uniota. By the time I got there on Friday, the line for the fish fry would have probably taken me through the entire first half to get any. So I decided to wait until halftime. And by that time, the main concession stand was low on food. Now, the popcorn was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
It was well worth the money.
Okay.
So I will give them that. I am looking forward to giving it a go this week. Now, one thing I was alerted to, we've mentioned Trevor Thomas once in this episode. I will bring him up a second time. He kind of mentioned this is without me trying it.
Okay.
A must have item at Westfall, which is it is an October delicacy. Mostly because – and it's something that Derek Webb should eat.
I see.
It is
pumpkin spice something.
Pulled pork French fries. And the barbecue sauce is a pumpkin spice barbecue sauce.
Oy vey. Really?
And I've been told it is unreal.
Mm.
Now,
I just hope Derek Webb's not listening to this show this week while driving down the road. He might have just ran off the road.
Right, exactly. I may have told him to try it on Friday. I don't know if they had it available, but I have been told that before the pumpkin show, they try to perfect it at the football games.
Okay.
So that is something. Next time you're up at Westfall, I would look for that.
You can't get that type of coverage on anything other than SBC Sports Talk, where John's going deep into his Westfall roots to get the recipe of it.
Yeah, it's not for me, but I think, like you said, Derek, if you are listening, this better get a big tweet out about something about this, because we're catering to the pumpkin spice crew now, and you are one. So, boy, oh boy, you, like you said, Shane, you just can't get that kind of coverage anyplace else. Well, let's move on to the real reason we're here, and that is SVZ Sports. And Shane, first, kind of a two-part question, because I know you were down there at the Piketon game, Southeastern Piketon. And so what are your thoughts about Lane Ruby and Southeastern?
Well, it's kind of good to get back and see them again. I'd watched them at different times in the year, and you know, they just continue to impress me in different ways. Obviously, we could sit here every week and talk about Lane. It's what happens with special athletes like that. Is, you know, it's such a great team sport. The offensive line's really doing a job, but I kind of was sitting in some different angles and watching some of the different things. I really focused on the Southeastern line play.
Mm-hmm.
And the right side of that line really was doing a job, but it's one of those things where the hole just has to be there for a split second, and he explodes to the hole, and if you miss your gap assignment, John, he is gone. I mean, it's mm-hmm. as simple as that. I mean, it's not a 10-yard gain. He is gone. You know, so it's one of those things. The pressure he puts. Well, then. The way they keep you honest with the inside run and how hard Nusser runs and so forth, it's just the key. Now, I will say this about Southeastern, and as they get into the bulk of their schedule here, this is really going to be the telltale, is their ball handling. There's so many different fakes, and there's so many different double handoffs and all these different things, John, as we've watched this offense more for a couple years now. People start to be more familiar with what I'm talking about. It's the two things that will beat them, ball handling mistakes and penalties that put them in positions where they lose their possessions. Now, they also put a lot of pressure on you with some of their dynamic kickoffs and so forth. You have to be really solid in your receiving team. I tweeted some of this out the other night, if you were following on the SVC Sports Talk hashtag there. But it's all about winning possessions. And if they get more possessions, you know, early in that game, Piketon was able to win some extra possessions. And as a result, Piketon led that game, 13-0?
Yeah.
You know, so those are some things to keep an eye on. Last year, you'll remember in the Paint Valley game where Bryce Newland made the fourth down play, John, that you and I talked so much about, and some of the plays he was able to make. Those are the different types of things you have to do. You have to win possessions, and you can't allow Southeastern to steal possessions from you, or it's just that one extra time you have to stop, you know, Ruby and that offense. So that's kind of where I would go on that Southeastern side, Bruce. And if you want me to go ahead and go to the Piketon side too.
Yeah, well, I was just wondering about Piketon's sophomore quarterback, Levi Guyon.
Yeah, Levi Guyon, he's terrific. This was my first look in person at him, and this offense is really good. You know, they have big targets, and Chandler, the Chandler kid's really nice. Good hands, nice big target, runs routes well. He's a matchup nightmare because of his size and a little bit of his speed's deceiving. Burton and Fuller, and you know, then Henderson really running hard, looked like he got banged up a little bit and played through a little bit of pain the other night, which was very impressive. The Savage kid is impressive. So this is an offense that is dynamic. Guyon moves a little bit better than I think a lot of people think. He's a nice athlete, so he can move around the pocket. He can extend some plays. makes all the different throws. There was one play right before the half where, again, guess who? You know, Ruby's just kind of in the right place, right time, and he does it defensively. And I couldn't help but think about, you know, the conversation we've had about quarterbacks playing both ways and so forth. Could you imagine, John, if all he did was play quarterback? Because, you know, he impacted the game the other night. I don't know if you caught the one tweet. I was assuming it was an accident. They kicked off and they kicked the ball right down the middle of the field to him. And I just said, I'll let you guys fill in the blank on the next 81 yards. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm sitting there in a game where obviously I don't have any rooting interest. I'm just there to watch a great game or whatever. And I couldn't help but think as the ball went down the middle of the field, I'm thinking, what are they doing? You know, it's one of those things. He picks the ball up and, you know, there he goes. I mean, and, yeah, I don't know. So you're talking about quarterback play. You're talking about throwing. Even he threw what would have been about a 40-yard touchdown. It was dropped. But, again, I've seen that young man make some catches early in the year. So that's a weapon you know is going to be on film, even though he drops it there, John. That's something that's going to catch people's attention on film. Really, really impressed with Southeastern. But I'm telling you, man, this Piketon team and this Piketon offense getting better all the time. Mm-hmm. And they're a team. This league gets hit hard by graduation this year. This is a team that really, really is going to be something that's going to be on our radar here in the next year.
Okay, John, we're going to talk Paint Valley Unioto in just a second. But first, why don't you just give us your thoughts on Week 6?
I think Week 6 went about as kind of as we expected. You know, Adina took care of business on the road. Kind of has clear sailing for the next few weeks before their showdown with Southeastern Week 10. Westfall, you know, hung around, and they're going to score on people. They're going to be tough to beat. You're not going to just walk into Westfall, or you're not going to just have them come in and, you know, just have an easy win. So I was really impressed with how Adina, you know, three straight weeks, really competing hard, getting two wins out of those 3 weeks. I'm not too surprised with Piketon's offense being able to put up points. They're, you know, like you mentioned, Goolian is really seemingly starting to play well. You could kind of see in week two when I saw them that, you know, they had some pieces. Just kind of had to get into a flow, and it appears that they're kind of getting into a nice rhythm, which could really make a really fun last 4 weeks for them. Paint Valley, I was impressed with their showing just because of kind of how much they've not really fully struggled on stopping the pass, but that's been the part of their defense that's been susceptible to giving up big plays. And then Unioto, I was really happy as a Unioto grad and kind of Unioto fan that they kind of got back to their roots and their strength and ran the ball. Only five pass attempts on Friday. A couple of them were by the freshman Mason Dowdy, who was injured in a JV game on Saturday. So hopefully he gets a quick recovery and can be fully ready for his next sport. That could be something to look for on Friday. Also, this coming Friday is, you know, their backup quarterback isn't going to be able to play. So, you know, how do they attack? Mm-hmm. And what happens late in a game if they need to start passing the ball. But they trusted their offensive line and were really able to dominate because of that. It was great seeing Jamarcus Carroll get – I had him for 200 yards. I saw the Gazette had him for 199. So I'm pretty sure that was the official numbers because I was just doing it on the sidelines. So it was great to see him right around the 200-yard mark again. And he didn't have to do it in a ton of carries. I think it was 13 carries. So just, he looks like he's about back.
Yeah.
And that could be pretty scary for the last 4 weeks of the league for the other teams.
Okay. Well, guys, we talked about this game in preseason, PV at Unioto, and now the game's here, so let's preview the matchup. It's a must-win for Unioto, entering at 4-2 overall and 2-1 in the SVC. And Paint Valley is in the middle of the playoff picture as they enter 3-0 in the SVC and an overall mark of 5-1. I've got some questions here for you. I'm going to go back and forth with some short answer questions for both of you. So, John, I'm going to come to you first. Here's the first question. Other than the obvious turnover battle, what is the key stat to follow in this game?
I believe it's going to be time of possession. Unionton must control the line of scrimmage to win the game. And the longer they have the ball, the less that they'll have to worry about the absurd explosiveness of Brady Nyssen out of the backfield. I do think his string of like 50-yard touchdowns was broken a couple weeks ago. And then last week he just made up for it by rushing for 300 yards. So I think keeping the ball out of Eisen's hands, because, you know, without Newland, they're much more ground-oriented. Mm-hmm. But if they can kind of bottle up Eisen and control the ball, I do think Unietta will have a really good chance in the game. If they go three and out repeatedly, then they're going to have a hard time, you know, holding up that explosive Paint Valley offense for 48 minutes.
Okay. Shane, same question. Other than the obvious turnover battle, what's the key stat to follow in this game from your perspective?
I don't think John and I are that far off here. In my notes here, I have Jamarcus Carroll carries. I think what's going to happen here is, you know, John, you did such a good job of highlighting the Edina game that, you know, I think what happens sometimes is if you don't convert on third down, if you, you know, if you want to try to look at things in the passing game, and you don't convert, that a lot of times those things can go, or you get that defensive score, that special teams play or whatever. I think that's going to tell the tale. I think the higher the carry mark gets, the advantage Unietta, I think the lower it gets, that tells you that Unietta is not converting third down. It means Paint Valley's defense is getting off the field. And therefore, on the other side, you just said it, Eisen and Mettler and company is getting a chance to do their thing offensively. So that's going to be a key number, I think, in terms of who's winning that battle of getting off the field on third down.
All right, John, next question. Give me a key matchup for fans to pay attention to in this game.
Paint Valley's Cruz McFadden versus Unietta's Bird Green. I think what most people will look at are the trenches and the running backs that'll be featured. But I do think there's a good chance that a play in the passing game will either create separation or make the difference in the game. It's very likely that Bird and Cruz, which are two of the better names in the SEC, will probably be on each other on both sides of the ball. And I think whomever makes the bigger impact could lead to a victory for their team. Obviously, you know, both teams are going to be centered on running, controlling the clock, running the ball. But both of those two have big play capability, and I could see it being a very vital matchup.
Shane, key matchup for fans to pay attention to in this game.
I think it's the Unietta passing game versus the Paint Valley defensive secondary. I think what's so intriguing here is there's been some inconsistencies there with the Paint Valley defense, but at the same time, Paint Valley's made some key plays in terms of some key turnovers and so forth. I think the other part goes back to my first point. You saw this in the Edina Paint Valley matchup, is if you come out and you're looking to do things through the air and you don't convert if you're Unietta, well, then all of a sudden it goes back to what we just talked about. Guess who's not touching it? You know? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those. It's a really a fine line in terms of, you know, Coach Netter on one side, Coach Cooper on the other, with the offense defense in terms of that chess game that's going to go on, in terms of finding those matchups. So I think that's really intriguing because it's kind of what you just said with those two tremendous athletes, but really it goes much deeper than that in terms of the passing game versus the secondary.
John, can you give me an X factor for both sides?
I will just go with special teams. Cordell Grubb's been outstanding punting the ball this mm-hmm. year. Field position could be flipped in a hurry, especially because I'm not 100% sure Unietta has caught even 10% of the punts to them this year. For the most part, they just let it roll. Or they're played up too high and ball goes over them. They've dropped a couple of them. Now, they had an injury to Colson Miller, who's a senior in the Vinton County game. that was a big loss for them because he was their punt returner last year, did a really good job of, you know, fielding the ball. So with Grubb's punting ability, that could definitely flip the field in a hurry. However, for Uniota, Gage Stout has been very good in PATs. He's been getting better at kickoffs. He's, besides the short punt against Adina, has been pretty good in the punting game also. So I do think having that weapon will help Uniota a lot. I do think the kickoffs, that could be a big advantage for them. In field position if they're able to score. So I think special teams will be a big-time X factor in the game.
Okay, Shane, what's your X factor for both sides?
Well, I want to go on the defensive side of the ball. I think it could be Diamond on one side. It could be Mettler on the other. I think those are two players that have really been proven in their career, and they're going to be asked a lot to control the running game of the other side. But I also think they can really cause havoc in terms of getting to the quarterback and so forth. If Uniota is going to look to throw the ball, you know, Mettler's a factor in terms of living in the backfield. And then obviously when you start running with the unfortunate situation of Skaggs and so forth there that you highlighted, John, I think Diamond becomes a real, real key factor in this game in terms of someone Paint Valley's going to have to get a hat on if they're going to continue to run with some success.
All right, guys, that's Friday night. I'm sure we'll all be kind of tuned into that game in one way or the other, and we'll be talking about it next week, no doubt. We mentioned earlier that we'd love to know about your opinions on various things, specifically the pay-to-play kind of thing, pay-for-play, rather. And that would be interesting to hear from you, the listeners, about that, and along with anything else that we've talked about on this, even your contributions to the Eat It segment, because that's becoming a hotly contested thing there for us in the SVC. But in order to do so, you might want to know how to contact these guys, and I'll give you that information right now. You can email Shane at admin1@svcsportszone.com. On Twitter, his handle is SVC Sports Zone, and he uses that tag hashtag SVC Sports Talk when he tweets about our SVC activities. On Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone, his personal profile, and the profile for the website svcsportszone.com. John's email address, jbruce1018@yahoo.com, and of course his Twitter handle, the ever popular Coconut Wall Papa. He, too, uses the hashtag SVC Sports Talk when tweeting about SVC-related information. You can leave us a voicemail at 740-569-3254. That's a DBK Media Services voicemail. And as always, we appreciate any efforts to share our posts on Facebook, retweet them, and maybe like them on Twitter. And if you're so inclined, please give us a great rating on iTunes and a good review. That will help our podcast become more popular. Shane, any more final thoughts here before we wrap it up?
Well, I think with me, I have an opportunity in the weeks to come here to talk some tournament volleyball, but I do think it's worthy mention of the volleyball brackets. Mm-hmm. You know, Paint Valley and Piketon, not the greatest draw in their respective Paint Valley D4, Piketon D3. Some tough draws, maybe an opportunity to win a game early. Then they're certainly a tough match. But keep in mind, we saw this with Paint Valley last year. Anybody that Paint Valley plays in the Division Four, I'm not saying they won't play good teams, but they're playing a team that's probably not considered a top six team in the SVC. So at least keep that in mind. And then I think Uniota and D2 becomes very, very dangerous, starting to play better. They're capable on any night of going. Keep in mind, in Division Two, the bracket's set up a little different. Less teams get out. So them winning a first match is kind of like a D3 team winning a sectional, if that makes sense, just because of the way they have to win two to get out. So it is a little tougher for them to win. But again, very, very capable. And then Division Three is where we really made out perfect. I could see certainly two all SVC district championships, which would put two teams in. And then in that third bracket, you know, Alexander is a very tough opponent, and North Adams solid. But here's the thing about Southeastern. I just said with their injuries, I'll guarantee that's not a draw that Alexander's thrilled about. You know, if Southeastern all of a sudden gets healthy, they're more of a three seed type of talent, 2, 3, 4 seed type of talent. And here they are in a 7 seed. So, John, we know how that goes sometimes. So that's something mm-hmm. we'll talk more about down the road as we get, because we'll have next week to really dive into the brackets and go. But I thought it'd at least be worth giving a summary of the brackets since they did come out, John. So you could even do the same if you'd like on the soccer there as you get a chance to give some final thoughts.
Yeah, on the soccer side, you know, I'll start with the girls. I was a little disappointed in Unioda getting the 2 seed, just kind of looking at comparable scores through like opponents. It wasn't really close. They were hurt a little bit by the fact that they went up and challenged themselves in Columbus and lost some of those games. But
Right.
But at the same time, you got to beat who's in front of you. And that's what one school's done, and beating on their league fairly bad in their league being a big part of the draw. But I do think that they have a nice little setup to at least get to the district semifinals before they match up with Fairfield Union, and that would be a monster matchup. I wasn't thrilled looking at the girls' draw. Westfall got the best seed with a 4. You know, they got a home game with Peebles. I think that's a winnable game. They knocked off Peebles last year in the tournament to advance to their first ever district. And if they do beat Peebles, they would face an Alexander team that tied Unioda 5-5 in one of the more kind of high scoring and absurd soccer games I've seen in a while. I don't love that matchup just because Alexander has such great speed, kind of elite speed on top. Could be an issue, but I mean, you have Marcy Dudgeon, you're going to have a chance to win any game. And then tonight, we're taping on a Monday this week. Piketon just played kind of with Rock Hill, who was the 2 seed, ended up 4-0, but they, you know, Rock Hill scored 2 goals late, kind of played with them. I think that makes, you know, Southeastern and St. Trace's draw a little bit better. Anytime you see a team 12-1-1, you can be kind of intimidated by that record. Then on the boys' side, I really like Unioda's draw. They had to go on the road to Jackson in the first round, but then they would have to go on the road to Miami Trace, both teams that they can beat. Will they necessarily beat them? You know, who knows, but they are winnable games, and that would get to the district. And then following would be an Alexander team that, you know, is very good, but also beatable. In Division III, we're not in as good a shape, really, but I like Zane Trace to be able to win a game. They'll host Fairland this coming Saturday. I think it's a very winnable game. And then they play a Wheelersburg team that's not the same Wheelersburg team of old. So with Andrew Ramsey in goal, they have a lot of seniors. That could be a team we could see get to a district. I think it's kind of an exciting time to kind of see where our teams are. I would like to see how the boys teams have success. And I think the girls teams can have success. I did say 4 to the district at the beginning of the year. I still think there is maybe an outside possibility, but I still think there's a possibility for that to happen.
Well, that's good stuff. I tell you what, I mean, I know we go long sometimes here in the fall, Bruce, but the one thing I've really had a lot of compliments on is how we've been able to stick to the SVC and how we've been able to really highlight all the sports. You know, mm-hmm. Some people really appreciated the cross country talk last week. I think they'll really appreciate some of the golf coverage this week, and then, you know, we'll try to do some of the things for some of the tennis and so forth. So one last thing I'll throw out there. If you heard Craig Kearns on the radio the other night, Craig, obviously a longtime friend of mine, he's principal at Huntington now, talking about the SVC scholarship. If you are interested in helping finance that a little bit, probably the easiest way for our listeners would be to contact your high school principal. As the year goes on, I'll put a few more things on the website in terms of some online opportunity. But I know last year, Karen Place of Zane Trace and Liam McFadden of Paint Valley received $450 scholarship. So they're hoping to up that a little bit this year if they can get a little bit more support. So great thing. They give that out at the spring banquet there. To a one boy, one girl, really cool thing they're doing. So appreciate Craig passing that along to the website as well. So guys, a lot of good stuff this week. I know the fall season will start to slow down a little bit here as we get through the state tournaments and some of the postseasons of these. But, gosh, hopefully we continue to stay busy because that means we have SVC teams going deep in our brackets. So guys, on that note, I think we'll go ahead and put a capper on this one. Appreciate it. Good show. Appreciate the fan email. That was an awesome way to start the show tonight. So, guys, as always, make sure we're checking out SVCSportsZone.com, and we'll always keep it 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.